There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
This is not a bad office for you every day.
No, I mean, look at it. It's beautiful. It really is.
What does it feel like to come into work here every day?
It's impressive, obviously. Look at it behind you. It's now turning green. We're coming out of the dormant winter grass that you get here in California, which at the end of the day, from a fitting point of view, which is what I do, that only makes it tricky for ball striking. It doesn't make it tricky for anything else, trust me. I mean, you cannot complain about this place. And I think that if you love fitting golf clubs for the best players in the world or elite golfers, as the day goes on, as people can see who are watching this, the flags are going to start to come into us. So that means you're going to be hitting into the breeze. So anyone who's doing club fitting, anyone who's looking at ball flight, that means you're looking at the perfect peak height. It's holding up against the breeze. The descent angle is going to be the way you want it. It basically means to get the fit wrong, you have to be pretty shin. So the range itself makes you look good as a player and as a fitter.
You know, as we were coming in here, I think we were all surprised not to have to cross a moat or go through a drawbridge to get to the kingdom. So yeah, maybe if there's something you can do about that.
Yeah, I was half expecting you to be waiting outside holding a stump too. Telling us we could cross the bridge
in a suit of armor.
Yeah, I needed to pay a toll.
Let's get some riddle or something.
Look, it's interesting. I think is obviously this new world we're all going into, the fact that we're sat here talking into microphones, doing a podcast, discussing things. Like, obviously it's changing, but we don't open the doors to everyone, so we must like you, which is why there's no night out there stopping you coming in. It's all our drop from the ceiling, but all those features are there. Trust me, we might do it on the way out.
We're not done yet, yeah.
So I take us through like a regular day here at the Kingdom. What's like hour by hour? What are you doing?
So for me now, I'm doing a lot of content for TaylorMade, so it really depends where we are. Obviously, filming this, we're coming to the end of quarter one, so I won't always be here, but if I am, it's on that area there, and it's filming content for the team and the golf clubs that we produce, and that obviously we launch predominantly in quarter one. Now, that will go from anything, golf bags, through to what we're putting on the My TaylorMade Plus app at that time, information. I've been involved with that, coaching information, getting that out to our consumers. Then there's stuff that's not in the subscription model as well. So it might be when we released, as you already alluded to, Stealth 2. We did that as a combination of here, and we did it as a combination at a local golf course. So we can do, how do you fit yourself into that? And then we can also work it in as to questions that might be more for the lower level of golfer that then might need help on it. Then in addition to that, and it depends how the week or month this is planned out, but obviously I run stuff on my own social media site as well that is usually filmed over on the top there, which is the Flick T, Jim Flick, bless him, absolute legend. I'm working towards having it called the Trotty T, but I mean, I'd happily share it with Jim, to be honest, with Mr. Flick. But I mean, I like to think at least I've got a one divot patch that we can name after him.
One slab of dirt. Yeah.
Well, it impressed.
We like to ask this question sometimes when we talk to professional golfers more so, but as it relates to your work and the things that you do here, what are some of the faces that you get excited to see, or some of those people that just like kind of light you up, fill your cup?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a good question. There's a couple of guys inside. I don't know how familiar you are with the people here at TaylorMade, but obviously, you know, a couple of people in marketing just get you fired up. I was sports marketing predominantly. That was what I did, and that basically is translated to working with the athletes. So if you go back to that during my time at TaylorMade, I worked with some great, amazing players. You meet some awesome people at the peak of the game. So we start there during our time. Like Justin Rose, got on great with him. Jason Day, amazing. Then you bring it, Martin Keimer, I was always pretty close with. Then you bring it into more modern day stuff. Tommy Fleetwood and his caddy, Finno, they're great fun to be around. Morikawa, good fun to be around. A little bit more serious, more technical. I don't know Scotty that well. I've only done content with him recently, but seems like such a great guy. Ricky Fowler, again, we have him with the Picks Golf Four. So that would be people that people watching this, listening to this, are going to be like, okay, cool. It's true. Those people truly are. They're good people, to be fair, behind what you see. Then it goes into our team. We have a producer called Lauren. She's great fun, keeps everything on point. The camera crew and Brooke and Ollie, shout out to them because, you know, they've got to bring the enthusiasm full time. And you guys know, traveling around, capturing stuff, dawn till dusk, lugging this shit around. It's dark. So I got every respect for them. And then it comes into like product people that I've worked with. And I think Mike Farabutti's been great fun. Tyler arranges the social media team's been great fun. And the great thing for me is I've known these people a long time.
Right.
Obviously from a distance, and then as time's gone on, I've got to know them more. We got some great intelligent product people as well here. Bill Price, who does the Potters, is a little older, but what a great role model for me in a company like this. Just enthusiasm off the charts. And doesn't, you know, been doing this a lot longer than I have, but just always enthusiastic, always positive. And then there's different personalities and different generations. Like one of my bosses, Keith Sabarbaro, he's a good person to look up to and to watch. He's had huge success in sports marketing. Obviously now I'm moving into the marketing role a little bit more. So the stuff I've learned from him has been pivotal and created a good foundation to go forward. And then when I first came in, one of my first bosses was a guy called Chuck Presto, who ran the global tours here. And he's retired now, but again, another amazing person that you'd meet. And then if you bring it more to this place in the kingdom, if you do get past the gatekeeper who lives under the stone out there, which you don't see very often, but we got Greg Manley, who's literally out there teaching someone now over on the putting green, and he's been amazing. I mean, really given this place, it gives it a feel, I don't know what it was like when you were kids, but a feel of, I get it, it's the kingdom, it's fantastic, we're sat on some pretty impressive turf here, but it gives it a feel of being like your pro shop when you were a kid. Yep. You go out, you get your good score, you go in, you tell the pro how you've done, the pro would like give you a pat on the back, rob a Mars bar or a Snickers bar, and then off you go, another 5 hours doing whatever. But
absolutely,
that's the way it feels, and they would be some people. I mean, there's a lot more to mention, and apologies if I've missed them, but it's a big place, tailor-made, and there's a lot of good faces and good people that make it put.
Yeah. You mentioned the, like, this place giving you that feel that you are a kid again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that three of us relate to really heavily. On our show, we talk a lot about the inner child. And I think golf is a really interesting key into unlocking that collaboration, that communication, that conversation with the inner version of yourself, maybe when you were younger, when you first learned how to play the game. And we asked this question to all of our guests. I'm curious to hear your answer. If you had the opportunity to play a round of golf with a younger version of yourself,
yeah,
maybe the version of you that was just getting into golf in a really serious way, what do you think the conversation was like?
Believe in what you're... The one thing I would say to them is the path you're on and the route you're going and the things that you're trying to learn is correct. And if you believe in that more so than what you did, you will go a lot further. Because I've been a little bit, and it's coming out now a bit with John Rahm and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that there's an individual who 150% believes in, which is not even possible, but believes in what he was doing in his formative years to be right. A guy that maybe physically wasn't as gifted as a Dustin Johnson, even at Rory McIlroy. Sergio is maybe the best player I've ever seen. I mean, in my opinion, should have done and won and won more.
I mean,
and that's harsh considering he's had a whole fake career.
Right.
But with John, you have someone that just absolutely believes in what they're doing. And I think he's very cautious now in this day and age in the way in which he goes out and talks in the media. What he does with the green jacket, he'll be a great representative and a great carrier of that. He's also respectful for Seve Ballesteros and Spanish golf, which is so big in Europe and global golf. And he's just a good carrier of that. So I think if I could say anything to my former self, who was a decent player, would just be like, you don't need to be at this level that you're, which you think is the peak level for you. You're actually a lot better than us. You can, and you know, I had breakthrough bits in the end of showing that. But I think that success maybe for me as a player needed to come a little earlier than what it did. And I think I was on the right track. But at that point, I had a great opportunity to come and work for a company like this. And, you know, I've often thought about it, to be honest, over the last 10 years. Like, did I do the right thing? Should I carry on? But you take the avenues you take at the time, and you make the decisions you make at the time, and you live with them. I mean, it's not exactly working out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So we could be worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be in a worse spot.
Let's go. Sweet. Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Not the branded
water.
Tinned water bottle.
Exactly.
I bet this is going to taste very
It
very
does taste pretty good.
I don't know what that logo on it.
Let's try that.
Pitch from that.
While Connor's giving us taste test, go ahead and give us a
8.9.
Oh, it's not bad. That's high.
That's a really high score.
That's a really high score.
Bad score.
Crispy.
What did success look like at that age?
I think
whatever age you had in your mind, who you were talking to, what did success look like?
Well, I think for me, again, if we keep it talking to me rather than upsetting anyone else, I think for me it was a case that, and I think I learned this, I set about to play golf to sort of, in the end, you have the huge aspirations and stuff, but it was to fund a life. And I think that the desires I had and the requirements I had at the age when I sort of walked away from playing properly, I wasn't funding what I wanted to do. I wasn't setting out a future. And I don't think you can do that. That would be more advice I would say to myself. If you go and you've become self-employed and you play golf as your chosen revenue stream, some weeks you're going to have a lot of money, some weeks you're not. And you have to fall to live with that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't called to live with that, which is why at that point in time, I needed the corporate structure and great avenue in front of me that was more clear cut. Look, if you do this and you do that and you work like this, you'll get rewarded with this. And off I went on that avenue. Now, I was on tour for 16 years with TaylorMade, and that was maybe six too many mentally.
Mm.
But it was fun for all 16 of them.
Yeah.
And I saw the world every which place I wanted to, three times, four times over, lived in three different continents. It's like, did I spend too long doing that? No, because that was my habit.
Yeah.
And like now I can accept that. But back when I was my younger self, I couldn't. And success back then was far too driven by financial security and winning massive trophies. And you are not going to have that as a mini tour player or a challenge tour player, which is the web.com for us. You are going to be struggling from week to week to get from venue to venue. And the budget airlines in Europe are going to charge you excessive amounts to get there. But that isn't, you're not going there to make money.
Right.
You're going there to learn and to weed out the guys involved, get through the grind.
Getting to the next stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned working with the tour players, and it's been everybody. You look at the TaylorMade Golf YouTube channel and you're on camera with everybody, every recognizable name on the TaylorMade staff. Group golf therapy is where golf meets the mental side of the game and mental health. I'm curious, who of the players that you've worked with historically has had the strongest mental game, in your opinion, after working with them up close?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and they're all strong.
Yeah.
Would be the answer. That's why they're there.
Yeah.
Because just to segue from the previous question, like Justin Rose missed 21 cuts, went on to win the 2013 US Open. So that's pretty damn good. I think the bit that, and it's nice of you to say, and you sit here and take a moment to take it all in, you're like, yeah, I've worked with everyone. But that's only the last 3 years that's been seen. So what about previous 13? You know, I could go back to players like Alafable, Woosman, Langer. I mean, Tom Weisskopf, Tom Watson. These are people that guys tuning into this, it's only a name in history.
Yeah.
But to go out and work with them was phenomenal. And to be a kid doing it and just to be like in awe of it and learning through them. I was an okay club fitter. I was absolutely shy compared to tour by the time I got on tour. And all of a sudden, you have the responsibility of working with absolute true legends. You are, they're telling you, you know.
Yeah.
So the stuff that's gone on camera, yeah, I mean, it's like a doddle because I've been doing it for so long. And that's even when you get to interact with Tiger. I mean, he doesn't really have anyone do much stuff on his golf clubs. It's kind of pretty dumb. He doesn't mess around. He's a bit like a kid who went to school to do the exam and he wasn't beat the fuck on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, he's got his shit together, which is brilliant. So anything I've done has really just been to ask the questions and manage the time, which has been easy but great. But I think to go back and to sort of think who would mentally be the strongest, and I'll give you the reasons why. And I think that I was in their heyday. I was probably at the peak of my skills and really didn't work much with them because it was an intimidating situation. And that would be someone like Darren Clarke. And I think the reason I throw that name out there is because you've got such a great player who's raised two boys with a wife who's obviously passed away from an illness. Then he's gone out in the forefront, been put in a Ryder Cup, managed to bench all that, go and basically hit the winning shots in the Ryder Cup whilst bringing up two boys who I happened to play golf with, one of his sons as the host over there in Northern Ireland, that it was maybe one of the best games of golf I've had with a host. And I've had people host me from 70 years old through to, well, Clarkie's son will probably be the youngest, who at the time probably would have been 16, 17, and he was just a pure reflection of someone who'd done a good job of parenting their kid. But how's he done that whilst having the career he's had on the road and dealing with the ups and downs of it? So like I say, I don't know the full challenges of every tour player in terms of winning tournaments. What Justin Rose went through to miss 21 Gutspeed, poster boy for gold, and then go and win a US Open years later in the work. I've seen the divots fly on the range, and I've seen the questions. I'm asking some of them, and I've tried to help the guy, but I don't think that you can even relate to one copy. But how does any... And if he was here, sat here now, listening to this, he... A, wouldn't expect me to say that, and B, he'd probably brush it off.
Yeah.
And the sort of guy that he is, sir. And look, at Irons, even my viewpoint, he was very difficult to deal with, and he was extremely pissed off at times, and he was one of the best guys in the world to be around at others.
Yeah, it's really tough when your job is so extremely public of your success and your failures that, yeah, I can't imagine what that looks like.
But yeah, you only see a fraction of your successes and failures, to your point. There's so much that goes on behind closed doors, outside the ropes, that we viewers don't know about and don't get to see.
And I think he took a lot of it out on people around him from the outside looking in, and he had an agent in a guy called Chubby Chandler, who with international sports management back then, Chubby a bit older now. Yeah, he's a hell of a character. Again, like Clark, who's a big man, can be a bit intimidating, certainly for a 24-year-old English guy who's just trying to stay out of the way. And that's what it was back then, but you realize the skills that those guys have to it. I mean, if you play it back in this day and age, social media, what they created and what they did together and what they went on and achieved, kind of like, if I'd have been a bit more switched on, I'd have probably got a lot closer to that. But like everything in my life, I have to sort of see it all before I'm comfortable with it. And I think that that's what's happened with me in terms of social media, and now not on the tour as much as I was, and yet in the limelight more than ever before, because just figuring it out, knowing who you could trust, knowing who's a safe house, who's not, and how you say the right things and how you dress that up. I had to learn that.
That's wisdom.
You know, it's amazing how you then look at a Rick Sessinghouse, who I'm sure you guys will come across at some point, and Colin Morikawa.
I spoke to him.
Yeah, and I've talked to him indirectly, asking him questions. He's careful how he answers them, but personality type in someone like Colin Morikawa. I mean, Colin's got to be, 24?
Yeah, something like that, mid-20s.
Can't teach that.
No, he seems like far older than
it.
Yeah. Rahm is 26. Did those guys miss out on something in their life that they will regret, or is that what you have to do in terms of a sacrifice in order to win? Or, which is, I think, the right answer here, it doesn't even feel like a sacrifice to be missed this. Or what are they missing? If society says you've got to go to college, you've got to party, you got to drink, you got to do this, that, well, I guess it's good. I never truly did it either. I guess it's good. But does Rahm feel like he should have changed things in order to get where he is right now?
Seems doubtful.
Well, it sounds like you were asking yourself similar questions.
Definitely. Because I think that, you know, I gave a lot of sacrifices and didn't make it. And the interesting thing about me is I actually stopped playing golf for that game because it pissed me off that much.
Yeah.
But then you get this close to tour players like I've been, like this one, and smell it. And it's like it wasn't good. Then I was able, after a long period of time, to sort of answer that question.
Right.
Like, dude, I was good, but probably wasn't.
So that decade without golf, like, what was that?
Well, I was working, obviously, on the Globe of the Tours.
But still not playing.
Not playing.
What did that you like?
It was annoying when I played seldomly. I played once every 6 months, and that was... Because you get an invite to play a golf course. I had friends in the industry who were going on and becoming successful and running the best golf courses around the world. And, you know, these places have got significant amount of money, membership. And he's like, dude, if you want to come and play whenever you want. And someone will come into town, and I'd be like, yeah, all right, we'll go for a game. You go once every 6 months, shoot high 70s. And this sucks. This is really bad. How am I going to... And then, obviously, your body's dwindling, slowing down, but... Mike happened. I mean, I met my wife at the time. My wife dead now. Still my wife. I don't know where I found with that. She wasn't my wife then, and she's still my wife. So, So, you know, that happens. You don't do that stuff. And it was plenty of stuff to occupy it. And then instantly, I have two kids now, twins, and I wanted to get them into golf. So you go and sort of try and pass the sport on, and they didn't really get hooked on it. And the next thing you know, you're grinding. And I'm like, what am I grinding for?
Yeah.
But you don't like the way it looks on camera. That was how it all started to me. A little bit before I started social media, but I didn't like the way it looked. So I started like changing it. And then that went from And someone would be like, oh, a buddy who had a training aid and he'd send me that and I'd start working on that. Then I want to get that right. And then that moves on and that moves on. And before you know it, you're keeping analytics. You're playing golf as much as you can again. You're meeting new people that are more the same vibe you are, like you guys, you golfers, you know what I mean? So we can bounce here. It's easy. And you're running a stat on an app like we have here with the My TaylorMade Plus stuff. And you are keeping track of what's right and what's wrong. And then, you know, things develop again and again. Another avenue that happens to be, I think everyone ends up where they should be going, right? The fact that we're all sat here and we're meeting today, shouldn't we get?
Yes.
You know, I don't know why yet, but we should be.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll find out in a couple months or maybe a couple years.
Yeah.
I love that, like, to put it crudely, vanity got you back into golf. That you're like, I don't like the way that this looks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to fix it.
I think it was more a frustration at knowing it can be a lot better than it was at points in my life. And like it was too slow for my kids at that young age, and they hit balls once every 2 months now. And this is another great thing. Like, my son is pretty sporty and it absolutely sloshes it when he flings. Hates the game and loses it if it's like a foot offline, which probably is something I've passed on to him, so that's not great. But he flushes it, and he's going to be a great player. And my little girl, hopefully I can get her to be a good player too. But you then look at how kids do it, and you're like, okay, if you get out of your own way and you just react to a target and just treat it like a game, it's a game. You know, one of the great conversations I had with Shane Lowry, we were trying to get a 3-wood for him in Texas. We were in Houston, and the range was downwind off the neck. Walked 9 holes at him and Graham McDowell. And then he's like, 3-wood's no good. Last hole there was, he thinks, get a 2-yard half by, can't ball on 1. 3-wood second try. He said, I need to shake it. I go to the truck, whip him up a 3-wood, come back out. Yeah, Shane, I'll give it a go. He said, yeah, cool. Puts it in your bag. And I'm like, mate, the range is there. It's like, we're not putting tokens in the machine here. Like, hit me some on the range. So he's like, no. We'll go and play another 9 holes. I've got a job to do. I don't really want to go do another freaking 9 holes watching you play golf, by the way. It's great. I probably need to do some work. He said, well, I'm not hitting balls in that range. Okay. Can I ask why you're not downwind, left to right? Never hit balls downwind, left to right. Don't like hitting balls on the range anyway. Don't like just turf. No, not doing it. Now, that right there is that's something I wouldn't have done.
True.
But that is, I think, what you have to do. And we ended up going out for 9 holes. 3-wood went to play. And it's like, yeah, he's like, the club's good. Great, we're on the 6th, which is 3/4 of a mile away from the truck now, buddy. I guess I'll truck up the way back. But the point of the story is that it kept me in shape. Yeah, it kept me in shape, and that was that. But I remember another one, Richard Sturdy, a South African player. I think we were somewhere like Mexico City at altitude, and we were running out. He kept like making me make changes to the clubs, and I was running out, running back, running out, running back. It was either me or a co-worker of mine, and we got back, and obviously hadn't seen he's out of shape. And I think it was my co-worker, and he looked at him, and he's like, hey, he says, and he prods him in the stomach, and he goes, I keep you fit, eh? With all the, you know, I'm just like, awesome. He does. I mean, he's right. But yeah, I mean, that's the length you have to go to for those boys. But the point is that they stay strong on what they believe in. And if they don't think that downwind left to right is right to hit that golf club, they're not going to work it. And then also with Shane, I also know with him that he doesn't want to put his bad shots on it the first few. He didn't want to invite juice on him.
Right. Or the memories either.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about that a lot too. Like, a whole part of why professional golfers are so good at what they do is they put themselves in situations in which they know they will be called. And I think that's where a lot of amateurs get out of sorts, and I can certainly, three of us can. We make stupid decisions all the time to put ourselves in situations in which we are fully uncomfortable, not in a good way. And I'm curious, like, if you know, getting fit versus like working on mental game, like if you have any advice for amateurs about putting themselves in situations that makes them feel comfortable on the golf course.
And obviously, like, pre-shot routine is absolutely the way to go. It needs to be your crutch that you can stand on, your cane. That's number one. And I've played with people since I've come back to the game, and I basically had the same pre-shot routine that I made one in the England training when I was a kid. And see the look behind. Wow, it happened to now in America for sure. It's drinks and music and stuff. Like, if I could do all this shit behind the ball, and this is you off, like, hey, this is my, like, yeah, this is my little boy. Before you're about opening your freaking drink and hitting about, I'm doing me right now. I'm going to kick your ass and you're not going to like it. But it's interesting, and I want to bring up just you boys turned up, and this is maybe a weakness of mine. I was hitting some fit shots, man. I'm just trying to keep it shallow. Went next to that patch of divots. I've had a beautiful grouping up there. As soon as I get out of my flow and see five or six guys coming that I don't know, I don't know if you noticed, hit one horrific fucking golf shot. Where's that going? Like, I've just hit 12 balls, they're not all my golf balls, but six or five golf balls that are close together, beautiful flight every time, little draw against the breeze, landing it on the left to right slope, clubs going through the turf perfectly, the toe contact, exactly what I'm working on, perfect. But because something gets in the way of that blow, because you get out of being like a child and grabbing and hitting, treating it like ping pong. If you and I went and played ping pong now, be a pretty good game. You look like you got both arms, both legs. I'm sure you can hit a ball. We'd get it back to one another. It'd be a good game until one of us wants to beat the other one and then get stupid. It is what it is. But that's just the way it works. And we all know that. But the point is, something gets in the way of that chain. Now bring it back into, okay, a fitting scenario. Where are we at? What are we doing? And I think that the one thing you got to do, which is why I say it in a lot of the videos I do, is get connected with the target. Because going back to Shane, and one of the things he said to me about the range, he grew up without a range as well. There was no range. So every time he tested the club or went to practice, he was going on the golf course. Yeah. What's the game? The game is playing. Richard Sterney, again, another name. You guys might have to Google it, but he was in the top 50 for a long time. He would, this rain, he did ball left of this tree. Then he did another ball towards that maintenance hub. Then he did one towards the camera. Then he did a low one that just misses these guys. You're trying to fit him and you're going to be around like a freaking wops. You're like, what are you doing? There's no target. But that's how he keeps it fresh.
Yeah.
That's what works for him. Now, going back to you, if you're in a fitting and you bowl off and you go into an environment where the fitter puts you in a situation and like, look here. If you're in a matted scenario, usually mats, squares, rectangles, stay parallel to the mat. Only take one ball at a time. Do not start rapid firing, because you do not do that. That doesn't happen. Yeah. Unless you're reloading because your shit is a bit one out of bounds and you've got the ball in your pocket because it's double shit. That doesn't happen. You know what I mean? So you've got to keep it as it would be, and you've got to get a pre-shot routine, and you have to connect at the target. So if someone's coming for a fit, for me anyway, if it's commercial, meaning it's not a tour player, I just try and get permission. That's on me as a fit. Like, that's my job. When I'm on tour, certainly when it started, I was trying to get myself to shit out. They'll say something stupid, you know what I mean? But, you know, obviously on tour, by the end of it, it's like being at a school. When you start out at school, you don't know anyone. When you're the top dog in the last year, you know everybody. Yeah. And that's the way tour ended up for me. You know, everyone wants to work with you because you've had success with everybody.
Yeah.
Because you work with Woosnam's, Langers, the Wisecrofts, everyone wants to work with you. Because the next generation, the Kymers, the Roses, and like, you were working with them. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the next generation, the Morikawas and the Sheffield, like, well, you were working with them. It just keeps going.
Yeah.
And then you realize that you've been doing it too long. And it is what it is, you know?
Then you start bidding their kids and then their grandkids, and then you're like, yeah.
Well, that's job security then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. I know the Tiger's agent, when he asked him to do some stuff for Charlie, like, that was job security.
There's a whole ecosystem at our fingertips in Clematite Plus. What is Surveyed featured?
I think for me, I like the MyRound Pro stuff, and I like keeping my own data. But if I was someone new coming into it, I have a coach that I texted and used, and I've known my whole life. So I didn't need to use that side of the app. But I think if I'm going into it, needing golf lessons or needing guidance, the list of people in there and the way in which that works, that you literally, they direct you to get the correct camera angles that you need to upload into the app.
Yeah.
And then they come back to you, so you can go to sleep and the next morning you've had a golf lesson. And then you go away and they're on you. You go away, you then work on, and these people that they're putting the lessons on, they're legit teachers. And you go away and then they come back with more feedback again, they change you, they give you a score. So it's not like you're okay today, mate. But there's actually a number, that an index that you need to go off and a number that you need to move. And they'll only move you when you've done the work. So I think that would be the number one feature for me. You can keep track of everything as well in there, which is always handy. I mean, if I was a ridiculous...
Oh, insane.
Yeah. But I like that. I like the My Round Pro stuff, which is inside the app where you keep stats data on the golf clubs and keep stats on how you're playing, especially if I'm playing a golf course I don't know. That's valuable to me. Just carry distances, and you can obviously see the way the topography of the hole and the way it's worked out, and you can map that, and you're like, okay, that'll work, and off you go from there. But I think you always know that there's some top-class athletes or instructors going to give you advice on there for the simple reason that it is connected to TaylorMade.
There's some validity there. Yeah.
Mess around. Look around.
Exactly.
I'm curious if you can share one of your... When you started working with Tory Rose, not even necessarily on camp, but just early days, TaylorMade, what was one of your first pinch moments? Like, I can't believe this is my job.
I'd spent a bit of time in the Middle East prior to being with TaylorMade, through a previous job. I'd done a lot of teaching out there. I played a lot out there. It was a good place. And when I left and went back to England, I was like, okay, I'm back there, whatever. But the Emirates at Dubai had meant a lot to me because I'd spent a lot of time there. And had some good memories there. Like I said, played some good golf around there. So then I left and got the job at TaylorMade. I remember being back out, started the job. And I took the job, probably in January, I went away for 3 months. So I went to Australia, never been there before in my life. I met Fanny Sunnerson, who my colleague at the time married to Fanny Sunnerson. So I was at dinner with Fanny Sunnerson, but I was a big Mick Faber fan. And then all of a sudden, I remember going from Australia to Singapore. And I was like, sushi in Singapore. I'd never had sushi in my life. For a start, if I back up, I'd never been to London Heathrow in my life because I lived in the north of England, so I'd flown out of Manchester. So I got down to Heathrow. So, okay, Heathrow's a big deal. Then Australia, I was like, this is pretty cool. And went out in Australia. I'll skip that. It was quite good fun. A couple of birds up. then we went to Singapore. Sushi with a German tour player called Sven Struve. So like, it's two people, a Scotsman who I worked with and a German. And never really chatted, and you haven't that. Never eaten sushi. I was like, all right, just pretend this tastes good at the time. Yeah. Love sushi now. Wasn't really sure what I was doing back then. Then went from there to, and then we went to China. And I'm just like blown all away. Mm-hmm. But these are all events that are at the time co-sanctioned with the European Tour,
right?
So the players aren't money. The players are good, but they're not like the big daddies.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next thing, I mean, Qatar. I spent a bit of time in Qatar as a player, so I was like, I knew the venue. I was like, okay, this is familiar faces. Then we went to Abu Dhabi. I played a bit of golf there. I was like, cool. And then all of a sudden, I'm in Dubai, and Tiger comes on the range, and that would have been a moment when I was like, yeah, this is a real deal.
Me real.
Yeah. This is not, I wouldn't say it was an aha moment, because sadly I was looking at it that I wanted to be there as a player. Mm. So, which sucks about the younger version of me, but I'd made what should have been a great moment into like a fuck you moment. So
absolutely. Yeah.
And so I wasn't like, when I was like, okay, you need to realize if you've done this, you're not going to do it as a player.
Yeah.
So you have to start embracing what this is, otherwise you're going to be miserable. Yeah. And yeah, I was too young to be miserable, and I was like, okay, well, there's no age.
Right.
So I started to that. When I say an aha moment, I was like, okay, embrace this for what it is. Realize you got Pete Cowan there, and great golf coach. You can walk over and listen to Pete as long as you want. We can interrupt him if you really want to, but I wouldn't suggest it. You could watch the best players in the world hit balls. And by the way, there's Tiger Woods. So you're inside the ropes. No one's kicking you on. People are asking you your opinion on golf equipment, and you're launching the best clubs. It's your job to get the best clubs in the game in play. And you haven't been back to England in now like 6 weeks, and you ain't going back anytime soon, nor do you want to or care.
Mm.
It's like, let's start learning.
Right.
And then that's really when like I started to just latch on to golf teachings that I liked. And I realised that a lot of the players I grew up with were not here to get on tour. And there were some good players, you know what I mean? And you were like, wow. And there was only two that, like Nick Doherty got on, he won 3 times on the tour. Garcia got on. Garcia was a gift. I mean, you'd put your house on there.
Yeah.
But that was really it. And then a couple of kids that I played like and thought they were good, They got on for a year, maybe, then off, 6 months.
No.
They'd scramble or make the ops, and you all was, wow, hardly anyone made it.
Yeah.
Made it. And I mean, when I say made it, I mean top 50 in the world, and was a name.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Kind of like, whoa. And then as time went on, obviously you're not seeing this because you're living it and they're still trying. And then, oh, he's given up, they've given up. And then as time went on, pretty much everyone at the Marcia is out at the gate. Nick Doherty is a commentator in Ice Waters, which is great. I'm sure it's a dope. He does a lovely job. He's a nice guy.
Yes.
And then Garcia, you know, that. Well, after that, the rest of the code, we're going to keep flying. Okay. It was a sign to me that I was doing the right thing. But at the time, you're living it. And that aha moment was a little bit more like, take advantage of what you got, because not everyone has this opportunity.
Yeah,
and that's what I did. Now, interestingly enough, I actually walked away from TaylorMade after a year, went back to playing, and then after 18 months of that, neck injury, and they offered me, they're like, we can't hold this job any longer for you, we would love you to come back. And that was at the end of 06.
Okay.
So, like, I did the job for a year in 04, left, and then came back. So,
just boomerang.
Yeah, yeah, credit to TaylorMade, to be fair, for holding out for me, and it was pretty cool.
One more for me, and then maybe we get into our meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
A lot of the stories that you've shared about your experiences trying to make it on tour and playing on various tours, and experiences that you've seen of other people playing on tours, seems like a lonely existence to a certain degree. Obviously, there's camaraderie on tours, like at Lons, you have your caddy, your aide, whatever, but it's an individual game. And I'm curious if you can speak to that a little bit, and if there's any, or prove that wrong for us too.
I think, look, it's changing, but I think when you start out, you have to put yourself with players that are better than you. That's step number one. And when you go to a tournament, you have to find someone who is doing it the right way and then hang out with them. You can't just go with your mates because they've been your mates, because they might just be going the wrong way or not making it. So I think that I always had success when I was a bit more of a loner. I was in with the right people because I was learning something.
Yeah.
That was point number one that I saw. I think then you look on tour, and if you take he won the Open in 1999, I think it was. Paul Laurie, was it 1999 he won the Open? Oh, interesting to get that four right. Paul, I think it was 1999. Laurie was a mediocre pro and basically broke through and became an amazing pro and then won the Open Championship. Lucas Glover was a damn good player. The reason I mention those two names is because I've been around the world in hotel bars or in restaurants, and I've seen them in the corner on their own, eat for both of them. Mm. Different parts of the world, but they're just doing their job.
Steven Glansberg.
Yeah. Much like you've got someone, though, that you will know goes out and does their job. There might be a pharmaceutical sales with them. They show from here to Houston, and they sit in Houston, and they have dinner in the hotel on their own. They get on the next day, they go and sell the shit out of pharmaceutical sales, and they get on their airplane out of Houston, and they take it via wherever, and they go back to where they're from.
Right.
All Laurie and Lucas Glover are doing exactly the same. And the reason I mention those two names, they'll go down in history because they won major championships, both of them. Unbelievable players, unbelievable golfers. But that was also another moment for me where I'm like, wow, Paul's at the bar on his own having food and beer. And Lucas is in this restaurant of his own. Actually, he had a something like a friend from that channel.
Yeah.
Having a beer and a drink and a meal. And you realize that it's not just the young kids that are busting their balls off to get up the food chain.
Yeah.
It's actually the people that have climbed the ladder and are sat on the top. It's just a job.
Yeah.
And when they go home at the weekend and they sit with their neighbour having a barbecue or whatever, they'll just be like, hey, mate, yeah, oh, yeah, I was in such and such the weekend. And that, what do you do this week? Oh, well, I went to Sarasota and it's like, brilliant. Yeah, good sales. Yeah, good weekend.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to realise that. So does that make them loners? I think it makes them very comfortable in what they're doing and comfortable in the fact they know that they're travellers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Now, then the bit we haven't got into is all of the podcast. You talk about caddies and those boys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the young crew, unbelievable, great for especially Europe. I mean, that was the break crack. We had some amazing nights out where you're in with the caddies and then you're just awesome. Very difficult to do your job the next day. You self-reflected, you know.
You had 7:13 tea time.
But great blokes. And then you get the caddies in the US, it's the same. It's a family of blokes who travel. It's just a little different because it's not culturally the same as Europe, but you know, these guys are all traveling the world, helping someone else achieve their dreams. That's a weird old existence. Now, look, the top 50 caddies in the world, they're probably making top down here. What about 151st player in the world?
Drops on.
Down to 350. Yeah. He ain't making it, and he's got to lug that bag around and keep that geezer happy.
Yeah.
Not easy.
Or hang out in the parking lot, the lot lizards.
After the Monday qualifiers, right.
You talk about people that love the game, they love the game.
Yeah.
As much as I love the game, for sure.
Yeah. Shifting gears slightly here, this is a question we asked to all of our guests, probably our favorite, GGT House favorite. What is your favorite golf smell?
I think cut grass, right? Someone would have definitely answered that.
It's a salad.
That's a good one.
Yeah, get it.
Makes a lot of sense.
Just easily and just that. Or even the sound of the mower, maybe. I don't hate that. Or even what we got here with birds in the trees. It's just a natural sound.
Yeah.
Obviously, another great one, which is more for me, is the sound of a long iron on the turf of Hoy Lake where I grew up.
What?
If you hit a long iron properly off that turf, the people playing with you, they fear him. So that would be a feel and a sound.
Right.
But would you do that?
Right.
And that's obviously where the Open is this year. I don't know if I'm going to go, but just days I've had there. Again, I thought through about it and you can feel it. The wind's got up now, but the prevailing wind. And if you would go there, especially if it was a little bit cool in the air and you were hitting shots, certain views aren't there that will live with you on a golf course forever. Yeah. This will be one view that will live with me forever, no matter where I go. You know, I've looked at it maybe a few thousand times more than you boys, but there's a couple of holes at Hoy Lake that will live with me forever, and there's a couple of views at a local municipal here that will live with me forever. So how can that be? How can you have one of the most exclusive ranges in the world with the most privileged range to work on will live with me forever? Then I've got a golf course near where I grew up that looked tricky to get in. But if you're a good player, then they make exceptions. And that's what happened to me. Something little scally from Liverpool somehow gets in half place. And then you got a municipal that probably costs you $50 to play it. And they're probably three of my favorite views of the game of golf.
They can mean equally just as much.
That's why it's cool.
Yeah.
And obviously now golf's getting the credit it deserves for a game that if you get through the hard ass of trying to get the ball in the air where you are roughly trying to hit it, and then you can start to embrace it, well, then you get your ball.
Right.
But sadly, if you go into it through the country club vibe, but you have to deal with all that, which I think is tough, I got through it because I love the game.
Right.
But I'm sure a lot of people would fall on the wayside. You know what I mean? And I want this vibe. I want the vibe you guys are giving off for a place like this, which is kudos to you. And hopefully people are just listening to this because it's a pretty cool look that you've got in it. And I think it makes everyone feel comfortable. And that's great that the game is going this way. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Let's imagine you go back to Liverpool, you go back to Hoy Lake, and they play you in the club championship. You get a walk-up song for the first tee. What's going to get you hyped up into that first long iron that everybody feels in their butts
as it goes through the air?
That's fun.
I would pick something from a UK band that lives out here now. Arctic Monkeys is what I'm...
Ooh, let's go.
Have you heard The Car? Listening to the new album?
Yeah, I'm listening to it now.
Cool,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So what would be the track?
I would have that one. I'm trying to think. You're just probably all right, but with these lights, you look beautiful when I'm struggling.
Couple of lights from Sheffield, I love it.
That's exactly what I would have, just because it's a bit of an in-your-face tune, you know what I mean? And that's what I would have.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to be a little different than the norm, but I've always had to conform because golf was as edgy as it is now. So I'm hoping I can catch the back end of this trend that's moving.
There you go.
You know what?
Weirdly.
You could be the professor emeritus for that trend.
Right.
You know what? As well, I heard the last from Arctic Monkeys are hitting the driving range now. They're getting into golf, so maybe we'll have to get them out to the kingdom. Get my TaylorMade Plus app in their hands and
get some hands over here, help set up more tables.
Yeah, exactly.
Chairs.
We'll get them all.
Run this back.
My missus, she loves music and concerts and festivals and all that. She balls out on all of it. And I was just like saying to her that apparently she has tickets for the Arctic Monkeys in LA.
Wow.
And
are you invited?
She's going with her buddy.
Oh, no.
What the fuck is going on? And we were driving back on a long drive. I almost dropped her off. I almost said, you can get her out.
I love, they're my walk-up song. Are you going to give me a turn of the room?
So we addressed that now, and okay. I will be getting a ticket to that concert.
Okay, good.
Oh, my gosh.
Jesus.
So Arctic Monkeys, they got you where you needed to go, and you ended up winning the club championship. they bring you back next year, host a dinner in your honor. What's on your champion's dinner?
If it's in the UK, I'm picking Indian food. I don't know if you guys have spent much time in the UK, but Indian food is phenomenal. So, and the other good thing about that, if it's a champion dinner and we play the tournament the day after, which I don't do, but sometimes Indian food has a bit of interaction with people that they don't like, so sure. Get rid of half the field.
There you go. Yeah. It's a little,
that's gamesmanship.
Yeah, you're game of the system. Game of the system.
That ideal is baked into that question, too.
But yeah,
it is. You get to feed everyone vegan. You get to feed them ice chips. They go out there and they don't want to eat already. And that's fair. Can you think of a time on the course? Maybe it's with your buddies back home in Liverpool. Maybe it's a time here where you just went out for a hit and giggle, as we like to call it. But what is the time when, of course, you laughed and the absolute hardest?
That's a good question. When I'm playing with my mates back home, they're just long-time mates, and people I played with a lot, so they know the level. Like, sometimes when I'm playing with new people, you want to, which is a me thing, you want to set the bar for how you play. Mm-hmm. So you want to impress.
Yeah.
But if I'm playing with people I've known for a long, long time, and we're catching up, and it's good memories, and that's when I've had the most fun, for sure. Usually on a track in the UK, and the weather's not too bad.
Yeah.
If, as long as we can get that, then that's good. But yeah, I mean, I've had some good times here, though, as well. We do a lot of tournaments up at Goat Hills, where I just kick around now, which is as mellow as it comes. And that's always good fun, and you can have a good laugh, and the boys have got good banter, and you've got everything from a shit golfer through to a tour player playing with you, and it's great crack, really great crack, especially if you're in the slot and you play at night.
Yeah.
It's always nice to be playing.
It's true.
I think that's the future of golf, though. You know, the shit golfer and the tour player can go and still have a great time. That's what I love to see.
Yeah, for sure. All right, last one I got is, we have a segment on the show that we call Get a Grip.
Yeah,
we'll give you an uninterrupted minute to rant about anything in golf that is currently grinding your gears.
The only thing I would touch on that I truly, and I understand it, but I think we need to address it, is just the cost to do it at the best venues.
Yeah.
Now, I get it, and I'm a bit of me, like I say, can accept it. But on the same note, the cost to join some of these ridiculous golf courses is off the chart. And then the other thing, now you set me off. I was at one of these ridiculous golf courses the other day, and it had sections to the range. And the member I was with that took me to a section on the range, which was great. And, that feeling you get, you're not a member, but you're an awful little baller that you don't care. So you're striking it. And there was a guy next to me who's 18, 19, maybe 20, absolutely flushing in. To be fair, out the end of the range. Which, I'm sat there looking at it, like 320 to the end of the range. And he's flying this thing. That I'm sitting there looking at it thinking, that's cool.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Respect. Like, I can bounce it maybe up to the end of the range. I can't flush it out into the trees. And all it takes is for the maintenance guy to walk out into those trees and pick up six balls he's hit out of the bush. But the fella, the other side of him, was an old boy who was clearly a member there, who clearly has the money to be a member there, so he's not worried about six range balls that have just gone into the bush.
Sure.
But he's not marvelling at the ability of the player to put blade neutral at ball speed to turn in it to get it out the end of the range. And he basically says to the guy, it's $10 a ball in for that course.
Ooh,
wow. You've spent $60 there. And I'm thinking, no range ball on this planet is $10 a ball. Let's just start there.
Point one.
But I'm not a member, so I can't chivvy it in. Because I've got to shut up. So I just keep pitching a few wedges on the end. But that would be my, ahead of the money and the cost, because all I think that hurts for the cost and the money is you don't get the best athletes playing game at a young age.
Yeah.
People will find golf, the men to be golfers, and athletes will find their way to be a pro golfer no matter where they're from. Look at Jon Rahm, he's from the middle of freaking Spain, and he's gone on and become the Masters champion. Hats off, legend. Love that, love it. It was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Sergio, it was meant to be. Love it, you boys have come a long way, but maybe not best tuition, you got to where you got to.
Sure.
But we're not allowing our kids to get in there and play. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, little boy, little girl, you've got to be pushed to do this.
Yeah.
I don't like when you're given certain tee times. You can't. I get it. Saturday, Friday evenings, here's big day. Maybe that's not acceptable. And yeah, let's reserve that. But let the kids play and teach the kids and have it as a priority that the members have got to, but also make it affordable for some of these kids. That's the issue with it. I get it. It's a tough game to learn. It's hard to learn. It can be boring. It can be slow. But if kids show an interest, we've got to embrace that. And that's why I like Goat Hill, because it's a facility that embraces everybody to play it.
Right.
The other thing is, just mind your own freaking business. You know what I mean? If you're there and someone's banging it 320 out the range, hope they give you a fist bump. Is that
right?
Because the game's about driving the golf ball. Give them a fist bump and hope some of that energy and that power comes off on you.
Right.
Just because you can't hit it 320, don't get pissed at it.
Yeah, it sounded like you had a little long drive envy.
You know, look,
patriarchy's done a number on all of us.
I wanted to get in the guy's business, and I'm like, just let the guy hit balls. He's obviously worked on this for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, and show up.
Really doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a grip.
Yeah. Get a grip. Yeah. Thank you, Ferret.
This was phenomenal.
Yeah.
We had wanted to do this for a while, and thank you for showing up. Thank you for saying yes. And thank you to the folks at TaylorMade who facilitated this conversation. This was fire. Cut.
Thanks for having us out at the Kingdom, too. I mean, this is a special venue for us to be at. Again, we got past the gate. We got past the moat and the drawbridge
patrol.
And hopefully we don't have to get stopped on the way out of here.
Remember this, boys. Stage you're at with this. You are like my young self. What you are doing is right. Keep doing what you are doing. You wouldn't be here if you weren't on the right track. It's going to be freaking difficult. There'll be times you're not making the cash you might want to make, or you've got to do three things in a day. But at the end of the day, just stay the course, because I'm telling you now, I've been doing this a long time. I think you're doing what I think. I'm doing the right thing. I like what's going on.
That means a lot.
All right, time to go get your kids.